Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Ham Nation, episode 205 for July 15th, 2015. Newsline is back. Good evening and welcome to another exciting episode of Ham Nation. Bob Heil is not with us this week, but we've got some of the regular crew here, starting out with Gordon West in Costa Mesa. Hi, Gordo.
Well, hi there to Ham Nation viewers and you, George. And wow, we've got some exciting conditions coming up the coast. We have our own Category 4 hurricane. That's right, Dolores, heading toward Southern California. But it'll hit the cold water and the toe-eating sharks and probably dribble down. But we should have some real weather this weekend. Now, speaking of weather, Slidell is having a ham fest this Saturday. And you know Slidell from a few years ago.
I'm getting a report from Alpha Delta 5, Delta Papa. That the National Weather Service in Slidell has lost all HF radio operations, over.
Well, they lost the weather national radio, but they didn't lose ham radio HF. So Slidell, this weekend, this Saturday is for you. The John Slidell Park Gymnasium, open to the public 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. So Slidell, you've got an exciting ham fest coming up this coming Saturday. And also, I look forward to seeing everybody in Boxborough, August 21, 22, and 23. And also the Clay Center Amateur Radio Club is hosting the Dexter Southfield School, where a lot of kids are going to be getting into ham radio big time. So that's my report. We're getting ready for the hurricane. Back to you, George.
Okay, Gordo, that sounds like a lot of fun stuff there. Speaking of Slidell and the people down there in Louisiana, we've got our resident Cooney here.
Don? Yeah, as a matter of fact, and somebody in the chat room just pulled up the special event for the Katrina Survivor Special Event Station. It's going to be K5R, the 10th anniversary of Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. That's going to be August 29th coming up, so you'll be able to get on that. Just look up K5R, Kilo 5 Romeo on QRZ, and SeaLark, the Southeast Louisiana Amateur Radio Club in Hammond, Louisiana, is putting that on. So, yeah, good special event coming up for the 10th anniversary of Katrina. And Slidell, Louisiana Hamfest this Saturday. I'm going to be there making new hams in the VE test. I love that hamfest. But in the meantime, I'm sitting here. I'm going through some QSL cards that I got. Look at this VE3 PYJ with his Jaguar. And there's, wow. Speaking of emergency stuff, N4U, these just came in the last couple of weeks. Thanks to these, a lot, you can't see that one. Who is that? That's KC7 FPF. And we got N8 KMC, the Southeastern DX Club. That's a nice car. Well, I'm getting a lot of them. Oh, look, K80 UBY. But now, Brian, be ready with the sensor thing because I'm fixing to moon everybody. Back to you, Jordan.
I was too slow.
Too late.
Don, I don't know what to say about that.
No one ever does.
To bail us out, we will have Dale with us tonight, bringing us some more great viewer videos there. Hi, Dale.
Hey, good evening, George, Gordo, Don, everybody out there. We're going to play catch-up tonight. That's why we happen to be on 2 weeks in a row here. We've got that Show Me Your Shack where you sent in all those great photos that we produced for June. We're going to have it this evening. We've got a good DIY video also. And while we're mentioning special events, on August 1st, the U.S. Coast Guard Amateur Radio Club will be celebrating Coast Guard Day, which is actually August 4th. But we'll have a special event on August 1st. We'll be operating as K1CG, Kilo 1 Charlie Golf. And I believe Gordo is going to operate also. So it should be a lot of fun, George. Go ahead.
Well, thanks, Dale. Glad you're here with us tonight. We'll be looking forward to seeing you a little later in the show. But right now, let's get back to Gordo and find out what we've been missing in all the short shots.
Well, this past weekend at the Ham Radio Outlet Store, it was Ham Jam. And we had a lot of folks here in Southern California all come up with a nagging question. How can I get on the air with HF from a balcony or a condo where we're not allowed antennas? So, Brian, let's roll the short shots and take a look. So, yes, for those of you that want to operate HF with just like a little portable setup, there's a way to do it. And the way is as simple as, and you get them from CB Radio Shops, vice grips with a hole that you're going to mount your ham stick on, the MFJ ham stick or Valor or one of those. And beside the vice grips, having a good way to ground your antenna system to a metal railing. There's also other types of mountings. This one's great for an easy up because it'll attach to just about anything. Now you see the hole, that hole right here, that's for where we're going to be mounting the hardware for the antenna. And you can get that hardware through a lot of stores. When you take the hardware apart, the top on the right-hand side is the 3/8 24 threads for screwing on the ham stick. The bottom is for your PL259 to screw into it. And that little white widget, don't lose the white widget. Here's why. That little white widget separates what is brass, what the antenna screws onto, to what is the metal lower, which is the ground side. You don't want to short them out. So you put the bottom of the antenna holder in through the hole, and you got to center that brass so it doesn't short out. That's what this little doodad's about, and the little ridge goes down over the mount, over the hole in the mount, so it looks like this. Then go ahead and screw on what is the 3/8 24. If you don't use this little guy, the 3/8 24 screw-on receiver is going to ground out. You don't want to have a grounded antenna. You want to have one that looks just like this. Whether it's black or white, don't lose that washer. It is critical to make this whole thing work. Now, make sure you use good coax, and if you're not great at soldering, from DX Engineering, you can get small coax sections, 15 or 25 feet or 50 feet. That's going to reach out. And here is the ultimate ground. You go ahead and vice grip on this with a common ham stick, and you will be heard on any band that your stick is resonant for all over the country. This is wonderful. All right, you got a 10 house, a 10 roof. No problem. Use vice grips. And while it might be a little wobbly, it's ready to go. And look at that chain link fence. That is the ultimate of ground for HF for a common ham stick. Now, when I went to New York City, I wanted to get on HF. No problem. The window frame was metal. So I just poked the antenna out of the Row Hotel, one of the few that still has windows that sort of open. And I had a great signal. So you're ready to go. Oh, look at that, Garlic Mike. He did the same setup up on top of the hotel behind him, and he ran a long wire, and it worked well because he had a wonderful ground with the antenna frame. And on an easy up, you can see where we've sort of patched it up where the antenna was clamped through there to the left. But the easy ups have enough metal, even though they're not making great contact, the metal frame of an easy up will greatly enhance the signal so you can have a great signal to get out on the air. Brian, if you'll go ahead and roll the next photo. Here's that easy up again, and look at all those cross-sectional frames. Easy to get a good ground with either vice grips or that other clamp assembly. And again, you can get these at CB shops because they're quite common. And who knows, maybe DX Engineering will carry them as well. For small boats, we use a stainless steel clamp, which is available. It's a little L bracket, and that clamps right onto this metal rail, and that's plenty of ground for a ham stick. So don't be saying you can't get a ham stick to work. Here's a ham stick that's on one of the mounts, and it works fine. Well, as soon as you hook up the coax to it, whoops, something missing there. And again, you want to get the ham stick or whatever type of HF antenna you're going to use. This is the Outbacker, up nice and high over the ground plane. Now, here we are with the EasyUp antenna. That's Tracy. We're going to be working with Tracy and his San Bernardino Emergency Communication Service team all next week for the Special Olympics that's coming to Southern California, where ham radio operators will be helping out with some of the behind-the-scenes communications. Anyway, we grounded to this canopy, and we had a great signal. Notice his smile. And he only smiles when there is a great ground. Now, when you take photographs of hams, make sure that whoever is going to have the antenna coming out of the top of their head is perfectly positioned. That's Richard 6, really big signal. And that's a pneumatic antenna mount behind us on a communications van. And wow, what a signal on top of that. And it was fun at Ham Radio Outlet. Now, we talked about the iPortable operation with that case, and we had a lithium iron phosphate battery. The first battery from Shore-I failed, but the second one worked great. And Shore-I did a good job of getting it replaced immediately. You can see the battery to the left inside the case here, and it ran for all day without a charge and kept both of those radios humming. Coast Guard Auxiliary, hey, Dale, take a look at that. They also use that type of battery technology to keep the case light and keep you rolling for at least 8 to 10 hours. Lithium iron phosphate Shore-I with a battery setup that really worked well for us. Here's additional iPortable cases, and believe me, they do a nice job of helping you ferry your equipment all around. Now, when you set up your high-frequency antenna on a loaded antenna, center-loaded, such as the MFJ whips, you may need to bring the feed point impedance back up to 50 ohms. And at Ham Jam this past weekend, we demonstrated that in the comm van, and we had a direct feed, and the impedance was about 20 ohms, yet the antenna was perfectly resonant at about 2.5 to 1. It was a dip, but not all the way down to 1 to 1. So with a little adjustment, we needed no coils, but rather a little adjustment. Oh, by the way, take a look at that. That washer keeping the antenna from shorting out is just about ready to go. But anyway, we did some adjustment, and we found the resonant spot just by going click, click, click. You could even hear it in the noise, and wow, the signal came up great. And for portable operations on the van, that is the mast that we put up. That's from the disaster guy. And it's telescopic. It is not automatic. You got to do it via hand crank. But you'll see that this little matcher is part of our comm van's setup. So, Brian, if you'll come back to my smiling little face, and that's the story. And that is, don't say you can't get an HF signal out of your apartment or your condo or whatever, and you got to wait until the new laws take over. Make it happen with a pair of vice grips or something similar to that. And the little mount receiver, screw on your high-frequency single-band whip, and you'll be talking all over the country as long as you put that antenna over a good ground. All right, we'll see you somewhere out there on the airwaves. So back to, I believe, George.
Well, Gordo, you look like you were having more fun than should be allowed there. Let me ask you about that little matching device you had there. Is that inductors in there, or is it capacitors, or what are they doing there?
All right. On the matching device, it is shunt either inductors or shunt capacitance. For inductors, that's fine if you're going to be running a ham stick that is just looking for a good coax connection. The inductors will help bleed off any wind noise as you're sailing down the road. And the capacitor version of that, both from MFJ, would be usable on motorized antennas because motorized antennas pass voltage up the coax line. And if you had an inductor shunt, it would short out the voltage and poof. So the capacitance is the way to go. And in the MFJ catalog, they have variable capacitance settings or variable inductors. I go for capacitors if the antenna is electronically tuned, and I go for inductors for most of my regular single band whips. Back to you, George.
Well, that's good information to know there. So you can get either one that you need then. And I can certainly understand you don't want to put a coil or an inductor across your antenna lead if there's DC voltage going up there. That's a big no-no. So thanks for that, Gordo. You know, it looked like you had a lot of fun at Field Day there. And a few weeks ago, we talked about Field Day, and I said that I'd be letting everyone know when I got the footage posted out there. Well, it's out there now, AmateurLogic.tv, episode 80. A lot of good times that Tommy and Wayne and I had at Field Day this past year. We will show you how you can air condition a tent. And it really made a big difference down here, Gordo. To start with, you need a lot of Visqueen and duct tape. If you got that, you can make the rest of it happen.
Roger.
All right. So let's get on now. Let's talk to Don for just a minute and see what's going on at DX Engineering, and then we'll come back and do a little smoke and solder.
Looking forward to smoke and solder. And Gordo, I'm glad you started talking about ham sticks and mobile antennas, because that's what we're going to talk about with DX Engineering. It's time to load up the family truckster and head out for your summer road trip. I know I'm getting ready to head to Huntsville, Alabama to the Ham Fest next month. We'll make sure that your mobile rig is ready, and DX Engineering can help you with that with radios, antennas, mounting solutions, and cable to outfit your mobile setup, whether it's HF, VHF, UHF, or what have you. You have questions on what works best for your vehicle, just call DX Engineering. They will be able to recommend some options and some good ones at that. And DX Engineering recently added several new mobile radios to the catalog. If you're in the market for a new radio, you might check out the ICOM IC2730A. It's ICOM's cutting-edge dual-band mobile, and it works just as well at home. 50 watts on both 2-meter and 70-centimeter. Expanded receive gives you weather, marine, utility and aviation communications. It has simultaneous receive capabilities, so you can keep an ear out both bands at the same time. You want to know why you might want a radio with aviation receive? I'll tell you exactly why. 1 year, I was traveling to the Huntsville Ham Fest. I had to pick up Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the Birmingham Airport. So rather than drive around and wait and wonder exactly when his airplane came in, I sat in the satellite parking lot and I tuned my 2-meter radio to the aviation ground frequency. First, I tuned it to approach, and I knew what flight he was coming in on. I listened for that airplane. I heard him call in on final approach. I knew he landed. He switched over to ground. I heard him get directions to taxi, and at that point, I knew that in about 15 minutes, Bill would be out. And in about 15 minutes, just as I pulled up to the ramp to where he came out, he texted me and said, "Hey, I'm out here." And I said, "Well, so am I." So that's a neat use for aviation receive. Not to mention if you're a pilot and you're into that sort of thing. But anyway, I digress. This radio, the 2730A, has a built-in diplexer. Let's use a single antenna for multiband transmit and receive. And there's Bluetooth option as well if you'd like to use that for hands-free operation going down the road. Now, Alenco is another great brand. The DRB-185HT 2-meter transceiver gives you 85 watts. You can also drop down to just 5 watts for low power mode. But, you know, if you want to get out there and reach out and touch somebody, 85 watts ought to be able to do it. Over 500 memory channels lets you store plenty of repeaters. Front-firing speaker, large, sturdy hand mic, and remote as well. And a large alpha, look at that thing, large alpha numeric display makes the radio easy to read at a glance. Then Kenwood comes in with the TM281A, a 2-meter performer, excellent performer in a mobile or portable setup. 65 watts of power. So a little bit more than the ICOM, a little bit less than the Alenco, but right there in the middle. Again, 65 watts, extended receive range, 200 memory channels, multiple scan functions. That's great for long road trips when you don't have a repeater directory handy. Just put that thing on scan and you can find it. Radio's no-nonsense design means it's easy to use and simple to install. And DX Engineering carries plenty of radio mounting products from Lido, Panavice, Ram mounts, what have you. No matter what car or truck you drive, there's a good chance that DX Engineering staff can get you a custom-tailored mounting solution that will work perfectly And, of course, mounting your radio properly is critical to operating safely and efficiently. We've talked about that before here on Ham Nation. If you can get it up at eye level, you're not having to look down, increases your safety margin dramatically. You'll find a wide range of mobile antennas from Comet, Diamond, MFJ at DX Engineering. And we'll talk more detail about those later on. But I want you to go to dxengineering.com because DX Engineering ships faster than anyone else in the industry. If you get your order in by 10 o'clock tonight, Eastern time, and if it's in stock, it'll be on a truck headed your way tonight. No waiting. Proven products, expert advice, DX Engineering helps you shrink the globe. Get online, request your catalog, or just shop online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week until you drop at dxengineering.com/hamnation. Thank you so much for helping us out with our little dog and pony show, DX Engineering. We appreciate you guys. All right, let's get into the smoke and solder aspect of tonight's festivities. Why, George, take it away.
Well, thank you, Don. You know, Goro was showing us some coax earlier and said you really need to make sure that stuff is good before you go out and do your portable setup or your filled air, whatever. And you do. Now, you may be accustomed, well, naturally, to using an SWR meter or an antenna analyzer to check things out. You may use an ohmmeter to check the continuity of your coax. But there's one more instrument that you can use that will really help you pinpoint troubles with a bad piece of coax that you might not otherwise find.
If you've been watching the show for any length of time, you've probably heard me mention on more than one occasion, usually when I was headed to a ham fest, that I had a Megger on my shopping list. Today we're going to look at what a Megger is and why I wanted one. The ones I'd used in the past looked more like this, with a crank on it that generated a voltage. However, today they're available in a lot of different varieties. Some of them may be called insulation breakdown testers. When you've got an old piece of coax and you're not sure of the condition of it, if it had possibly had water in it before or something like that, you need a good way to test it out. You can check it with an ohmmeter, or you can check it by running RF down it, but sometimes you might miss a potential problem with breakdown resistance in the cable. Well, that's where a Megger comes in handy. It sends a real high voltage down the cable and measures for high resistances in the megohm ranges. Now, a regular ohmmeter might have a megohm scale on it, but that doesn't mean it's going to show the resistance that might be present from a water leak or some other imperfection in the cable. That's where the megohm meter comes in handy. Since it's sending a high voltage down there, it's much easier for it to break down and conduct. So we'll know more about the cable that way. Let's just take a look at a RG8 patch cable I have sitting here. Now, to use the Megger, you want the cable open on both ends. You don't want anything hooked to it. And we'll connect here to one end. And you need to be careful because I'm going to send a high voltage down here, so you don't want anything shorted there at the other end. And you want to keep your hands away from what you're testing because you could get a really nasty shock there. So let's just shoot 1,000 volts down this cable and see if there's any breakdown resistance in it. Now that cable looks perfect. No problems whatsoever. It's infinite resistance. Let's check a shorter piece now. Also, it went to overload too, so that means that it can't read any resistance there. Now you'll notice when I let off the button here, and the meter scale falls down, you'll see the voltage dropping. This just tells us that the voltage has dropped and now it's safe for us to handle the leads. This may be different on different meg meters, so you want to be careful with that. Now, we're going to look for an imperfection here. I don't have a piece of cable currently that I know is bad, so we're just going to make our own. We'll take this piece of RG58. And I'm just going to take a tack and put a little hole through the insulation here. And now we'll sit that in a cup of water and let that sit there for a minute or so. And then we'll check the breakdown resistance. Okay, that's been sitting here a couple of minutes. Now let's do a measurement. We'll go back up and shoot 1,000 volts down it here. Okay, we're reading resistance now. That's telling us that this cable has a problem. So you can see that a Megger is reading the problem there. Now let's look at it with a standard ohm meter. We're on the 20 megohm scales here. We're not reading anything at all. That's because this meter's not sending enough voltage down there into the cable to actually break down. So this is where a megometer would really come in handy. If you're going to a ham fest and shopping for old cable, using a megometer here would be a great way to determine if that cable had some previous damage. A megometer may be used for several different purposes, for checking insulation resistance and motor windings, house wiring. Any insulation is going to break down with time, so this instrument has a lot of uses. Now, you should do a little research before you go to use any. There's time averaging that a lot of tests require, where you will run the megometer for 1 minute and then a 10-minute trial period and do some averaging to determine what is common. On a longer piece of wire, you might actually read some resistance. So it's good to know the correct procedures to how to calculate that and see if the cable is good. In my case here with these two short pieces, there was no resistance for a good piece of cable. So there you go, what a megometer is and how I'm going to use it.
A megger is a nice thing to have. Not every ham needs one of those. All you need is one buddy with one, and you're set, because he won't be using it all the time, and it'd be happy to help you out there. Not this year at Field Day, but 2 years ago at Field Day, Wayne brought a bunch of coax with him that he had collected from Hamfest and different places, and we checked several pieces of it with that megger and found that he had a few pieces of coax in there that were bad he didn't actually know about, but he marked those, and we know not to use those again, or at least to cut the connectors off and test one more time. But, you know, sending that higher voltage down there really is more likely to break down that resistance or break down the insulation on the cable and let you see that you've got a problem, where you just wouldn't pick that up with an antenna analyzer or even an SWR meter. A megger won't tell you where the fault is, which you can sometimes tell with an antenna analyzer and TDR and different instruments, but it will tell you that there is definitely something wrong. Okay, last week I asked a question: what was the first public telegram in America? And we had a winner, and that is Roland Mason, KJ6DQ, and he said the first public telegram in America said, "What has God wrought?" And that's correct. We're going to send you this Howl Sound T-shirt and a Howl Sound hat for playing along there. Let's do this again next week, but I think what we'll give away next week will be this dual 24-hour MFJ clock. Set your local time on one side. It's a 24-hour clock. Put UTC on the other, and you'll always know what time it is no matter where you are. If you'd like to win that, well, then answer this. Why would a normal ohm meter not work as well as a megger for checking insulation breakdown? So if you think you know the answer, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com. And you could win. So now let's get on over to Don. You know, Don, we've been missing out on the news here a while, and it's kind of, we're all really behind here. Can you catch us up?
You know, as a matter of fact, I can. Amateur Radio Newsline is back, and we have a video presentation for you tonight. So hopefully we're not going to be missing any more weeks. We don't have Dr. Tamitha tonight. She's got a bunch of work-related stuff and family-related stuff that's taking up a lot of her time. But anyway, she told me to tell all of her ham radio friends hello. So hi from Dr. T. And right now, let's get into the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 1968, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, July 15th, 2015. After an extended hiatus, Amateur Radio Newsline is back. Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, and I will be doing our best to continue what Bill Pasternak started back in the mid-70s. When Bill passed away, Newsline lost not only its leader, but its head writer and editor. Reading stories into a microphone is the easy part, but nothing happens before those stories are gathered, edited, and written for production. And that was, for the most part, all done by Bill. Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, picks up the story.
J. Just days before his passing, Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, and I shared a conference call with Bill to discuss the future of Newsline. I told Bill about an email I received from a ham who was very interested in volunteering to take on the task of writing each week's newscast script, something Bill had done almost exclusively since its inception as Westlink Amateur Radio News in September of 1977. After hearing her qualifications and background, Bill's words were, and I quote, "Hire her." So now, please join the entire Newsline staff in welcoming aboard Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT, as our new lead news writer. Karen lives on Long Island, New York, and holds a general class ham license. She's a writer, editor, and an equestrian and wildlife rescuer. Now, we'll let Karen tell you more about herself.
Hello from New York. This is Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT, and I'm a New York newspaper writer and editor and the newest member of the team here at Amateur Radio Newsline. I'm especially excited to be here because Newsline is a perfect combination of my work in the news business with all the best parts of radio. I got my ticket last year after waiting almost a lifetime to take the leap, but I'm so glad to be here. So while I'm catching up on all those years of missed QSOs, I'll also be looking for and writing about all those things that affect hams like you and me on and off the air. I can't wait to see what's ahead for all of us.
Thanks, Karen, and welcome to the Amateur Radio Newsline family.
Welcome, Karen. You're going to fit in just fine. Now on to the news. In the wake of Field Day, several states issued proclamations recognizing amateur radio and its role in emergency communication. Governors in Alabama, Connecticut, Florida, Indiana, New Hampshire, Oklahoma, Wisconsin, and Washington State were joined by officials in various counties and cities around the nation honoring the hobby with proclamations recognizing ham's public service and emergency response roles. At the same time, lawmakers on Capitol Hill were also turning a sharper focus on ham service in natural disasters as Senator Roger Wicker, a Mississippi Republican, presented that chamber's equivalent of the Amateur Radio Parity Act already under consideration in the House of Representatives. The bipartisan bill, co-sponsored by Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut, addresses the land use restrictions that often prohibit amateur radio antennas from being installed, especially in areas where homeowners associations exist, and set standards for neighborhood aesthetics. In sponsoring the bill, Wicker noted the role hams had played during Hurricane Katrina, which had left more conventional forms of communication disabled. The bill, which is now on the floor of the Senate, seeks to protect the rights of radio amateurs to install antennas and towers for communication. In just a few weeks, school kids in Indiana and around the country will get a rare chance to talk to someone literally out of this world.
In little more than a month, elementary school students in Bunker Hill, Indiana will be experiencing the ultimate QSO. Sometime in August, they get to work the International Space Station. The students were chosen earlier this year for the program, which is known as Amateur Radio on the International Space Station. Maconaquai Elementary School was among those approved for the coveted DX, which will take shape as a 10-minute QSO on FM. The school district plans to provide a live feed to each of the school district's buildings, as well as make the contact available for listeners to hear online. As in years past, hams aboard the space station have been busy connecting with students this year and recently completed a scheduled radio contact with Tulsa Community College in Oklahoma. On July 1st, students there connected with one of the Russian cosmonauts on board.
And finally, if you're a fan of Top Band, the FCC has some good news.
The FCC decision affects amateur use on the band's range between 1900 kHz and 2000 kHz. David Sumner, K1ZZ, CEO of the ARRL, said he expected hams would likely have to contend with radio buoys operating on 160 meters out of fishing vessels. But according to the FCC, the buoys are mostly low power and occupy a narrow portion of the band, and they're expected to have negligible effect on hams using those frequencies.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for over 37 years and counting. At www.arnewsline.org. For Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, and Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, 73, and we'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Sure is good to have Newsline back. That's some exciting stuff, and thanks to everyone for the support that they've given us in trying to pick up the pieces after Bill's passing. It's pretty daunting task, I tell you, and some pretty big shoes to fill. Well, you know, I was going through QSL cards earlier, and I wanted to go through the rest of the stack. KK4RDI sent this one with a nice Florida alligator on there. It says, Gordon, no, that's not a Louisiana alligator like you fed when you came down here to visit me. No, it's not a that's a Florida alligator, probably not no relation. Of course, K1N, you know, I got that card not too long ago. That's a cool card. But the coolest card here, George, and let's see if you can tell what's cool about that. What's the coolest thing about that card? Can you tell me? Time's up. The coolest thing about this card is Andy's in the chat room watching. So, Andy, I got your card. Thanks a lot. Let's go check out a word now from another one of our fine Ham Nation supporters, and that would be ICOM.
ICOM America and ICOM Canada are teaming up to offer ham radio operators some incredible savings. Get a great deal on a D-Star repeater direct from ICOM and help expand D-Star across North America. With the release of the ID51A Plus and ID5100A, more people are getting on the air with D-Star. For a limited time, ICOM is offering a buy direct D-Star promotion for U.S. and Canadian residents only. Purchase a D-Star repeater through the D-Star Infrastructure Program. Visit ICOM America's website, view current amateur promotions, and buy direct. This promotion is good for a limited time only. Review complete instructions online and call or email in your order today. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM's Buy Direct program. You can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation. Throw your name in the hat for some great swag prizes like T-shirts, hats, band plans, and a lot more. And you can also learn how you could win the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. For July, the grand prize is the ID31A compact 5-watt UHF handy talkie with submersible construction, analog and D-Star operation, built-in GPS, a micro SD card slot, and a lot more. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode of Ham Nation. Check out the official rules and all of the previous drawing windows. And don't forget, sign up and follow ICOM America, Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. All right. Thanks, ICOM, for supporting Ham Nation. Let's get Dell in here now. I know, Dell, you've had a lot of videos in the can there for a while, and we want to help you get some of them out there this week and hopefully maybe eventually get caught up. So what have you got for us?
Hey, sounds pretty good. I tell you what, George, we're going to have a catch-up Wednesday. But first, do have a correction. I got a note from Dick Anderson, KE7 Alpha. He's the net control for the Coast Guard Amateur Radio Club net there on Saturdays at noon Eastern time. He's sort of in charge of coordinating a lot of the activity for Coast Guard Day. And the Coast Guard Day operation of K1CG, at which both Gordo and I will be operating, standing a two-hour watch, will be Sunday, August 2nd. The activity is going to start about 10 in the morning Eastern time, run until midnight around Eastern time. There'll be operators all over the country operating. So it should be a lot of fun. That's the K1CG special event to celebrate Coast Guard Day. And speaking of special events, before I jump into the video, the Wichita Amateur Radio Club co-sponsoring the W0W, Whiskey Zero Wichita event that commemorates another year of baseball round the clock at the National Baseball Congress at the Lawrence Dumont Stadium in Wichita. That should be a fun activity, too. You'll be able to work them, get a really nice certificate from W0W. That's on August 1st. Well, we've got the Show Me Your Shack episode this evening that we prepared for June 17th. We've got a World Amateur Radio Day video and a DIY video that just might help the beginners lose their fear of the soldering iron. Really nice job from a gentleman up in the Midwest. Well, we'll jumpstart the segment this evening with a report from the KP4FD operation on World Amateur Radio Day. And with the report for Ham Nation, here's WP3GW.
Sierra Uniform Lima 5 and 8 Plus, Alerta Puerto Rico. Thank you for the call. 73, you're set. Okay, the call is Kilo Papa 4, Florida Delta, Portable Iaru.
Kilo Papa 4, Foxtrot Delta, Portable Iaru.
Roger, my friend. My location is on North de Puerto Rico, the San Juan, my friend. Thank you, 73. You're set. This is KP4, Florida Delta, Special Event.
Special Event, Kilo Papa 4, Fox Delta.
Secure Special Event, Secure Special Event, KP4, Fox Delta, KP4, Fox Delta.
Blanco, Bravo Yankee, Sierra 59. 73, you're set. Kilo Papa 4, Fox Delta, Slash Yaro, you're set.
Kilo Papa 4,
Fox Delta,
Slash Yaro, Kierzer. Kierzer, I'm in the north of the island of Puerto Rico.
Hello,
Kierzer, you're
on the
information, Kierzer.com, Kierzer, Kilo Papa 4, Fox Delta, Slash Yaro.
Roger, Roger. Oscar, November 3, Hotel India, Mike, you're 5 and 9 here in northern side of Puerto Rico. You're in the log, my friend. Thanks. Thank you, Sandro. You're in the log and have a good rest of the day there. Oscar, November 3, Hotel India, Mike. Bye-bye. And QRZ, KP4, Fox Delta, Strobe Yard.
Okay, did you get a look at the antenna farm at Angel's QTH there? That was something else. Angel, thanks for another nice report for on Ham Nation activity there in Puerto Rico. Well, sometimes it takes a while to get brave enough to try something new, and do it yourself is a very important part of amateur radio. And Eric Ferguson has prepared a nice video. He describes a simple project that just might help you erase your fears and help you jump into DIY with both feet. Here's Eric. He's Alpha Charlie 9, Bravo X-Ray.
Hi, gang. It's Eric, AC9BX. If you're anything like me, you probably have a stash of old wall-wart power packs from retired cell phones or internet routers and whatnot. Thinking that you'll put one to use someday. And you might, the connectors never fit what you need, but I found a use and we'll have to change the connector. So, when Radio Shack stores were closing, I picked up their weather radio on clearance for $5. I grabbed three or four of them. These are originally something like $50, so I'll take it. This is a very nice weather radio, portable, and weather resistant. Who would have thought a weather resistant weather radio? How about that? And the neat thing is, you can use, and you should, use rechargeable batteries. There's a switch inside to change between alkaline and rechargeable. These are affordable Tenergy. They work great. The radio will run for about 3 days. And maybe you might get 4 or 5 days out of alkaline. That's a lot of battery changing. So rechargeables is definitely the way to go. However, as the store was closing, there were no available power packs that I could use as a charger. So I'm going to take this old retired cell phone charger, change out the connector, and we'll be good to go. The instructions say that we need a power source of 6 volts at 300 milliamps. So let's take a look at our available power packs and see what we can find. Here's 5 volts at 550 milliamps. Well, the current is more than enough. That's a good thing. We don't need lots of current, but we have to make at least that so it'll run the charger properly and run the radio. And what about the voltage? Well, it's a 3-cell system with nickel metal hydride in there, so that works out to about 3.8 volts. So in order to charge it, we need about 4, maybe 4.5. 5 should get it done. And these are seldom regulated very well. It's not unusual to find them quite a bit more, especially with no load on them. So this should work out just perfectly. We begin with a snip. We've got to strip our wires back. Let's put it on our meter and see what we have. This makes just about 5 volts. And we've identified which wire is plus and which wire is minus. So the one with the stripe on it, in our case, is the positive wire. Let's unplug and solder it up. The directions also say we need Radio Shack adapter plug size B. Well, we don't know what size that is unless you have it memorized, so we'll look it up. Wikipedia has a very nice entry on coaxial DC power connectors, and it shows you the various names and sizes and what they're used for. Adapter plug size B is 4 millimeter outside diameter and a 1.7 inside. Compared to buying one of these retail with sales tax and the gasoline to get there, I bought a 10-pack on eBay and had them delivered to my door. All right, I put a piece of tape on here to avoid shorts. Let's close it up, plug in, and we'll test our voltage. We're going to need a wire because this is very small. So I'm just going to use a piece of solder, and we measure. There is our 5 volts. We're good to go. Let's plug in the radio. And it shows that it's charging, and it plays.
Precipitation 60%. Tonight, mostly cloudy.
There you go.
Well, thanks, Eric. Most of us have a boatload of wall warts from long-forgotten devices handy, so we appreciate the nice tips about how to find the information you need for a project on Wikipedia. Well, it's now time to wrap up the video segment with the shack photos you submitted during May and June. And here's Show Me Your Shack. This month on Show Me Your Shack, we have a few blasts from the past and some nice gear. Where were you in 1991? Well, Randy, then WA2AGE, was at his satellite operating station in Rochester, New York. Here's his antenna, 44 elements on 2, 38 on 70 centimeters. Larry, WD9HOT, operates this small but effective station just off the Marquette University campus in Milwaukee. The FT-991 does a great job with his precision power N-fed quad band antenna. Roger W0GGY drives a 10-meter dipole in a tree with an FT-991 and an IC-7000. He also has 2-meter and 440 rigs. Steve WG5TX sent us this picture of his son Kevin working Ham Nation's Don, AE5DW. And here's Kevin's shack just below the tree with the G5RV in the front yard. Well, John, K4SFD, sent us this photo of his DIY mobile mount in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Brian, W8FTI, has his main car in the shack, too, He uses the FT-857D most of the time on both HF and VHF. Brian's made contacts around the world with this mobile antenna on his 1994 Ford Ranger. A Brent W5DPH has all of his ham gear in a small cabinet. Rigs include an IC718 and an ID5100. His antenna is a 20-meter dipole. Dan, WA5CYR, doesn't own this, but he thought it would make a nifty ham shack or a meeting place for the local ham club. Randy, K7AGE, sent us this picture of Gordo doing his thing at CPAC this past month. They have a nice setup at K5WPH. That's the station operated by members of the Sun City Amateur Radio Club. A Martin WB5LJO shows us the view of El Paso and Fort Bliss with this selfie as he tunes one of the club's antennas. David KB9EWG uses a TK705D and a TK805D in his shack. He sent us several views. Ron KD4IJS in Thurman, North Carolina, works mainly 10 meters with his Kenwood TS-830S. His 10-meter beam's on a Ron 25G. It's at 30 feet. Randy, K7AGE, captured much of the action at CPAC with his trusty DSLR. Here, Bud, W3FFV, demonstrates his trike mobile rig. Here's a close-up view of the business end of the trike mobile. And here's Bud on the air, Trike Mobile. And last but not least, Dan, WA5CYR, found this magazine clipping featuring the 1-kilowatt mobile rig used by W4EYI. He used Collins S-Line equipment operating on 40 meters. The AC came from a 1,500-watt Onan generator mounted on the back of the car. And that's Show Me Your Shack for May and June 2015. Send your photos to Ham Nation Videos at TWIT.TV. You just may see your shack on Ham Nation. Okay, that pretty much wraps it up for this evening. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another video segment, and we hope to give you that graphical look at the metadata from the Ham Nation 200 special event last month. And Nick, W5NSA, sent us a video and a report from a ham fest he attended in Poland. And we hope also to get the Space Weather Digest that was presented at Dayton. We got a 5-minute digest from Dan in 9LVS of that hour-long presentation there during the antenna forum. It's very educational and should be nice to watch that evening. In the meantime, we always need new videos. We're low on shack photos, too, so get yours to us as soon as possible. Email both the link to your video and your shack photos to hamnationvideos@twit.tv. Well, it's time now to visit Ham Nation's Canyon City, Colorado studio and find out what's happening in the chat room. Amanda, good evening. It's all yours.
Well, hey, Dale, before you go away, I do have a question for you.
Oh, what is that?
Do you have to be a professional? People that want to show their pictures to you, show their shacks, are you willing to take anything? How does the process work? How do people upload anything special anyone needs to know to get their pictures and videos to you?
Okay, the pictures and the videos will be two separate issues, I think. As far as the pictures go, a lot of the pictures we get are real nice. One thing you want to avoid, though, that really makes it hard to edit the photo is when you're shooting into a dark shack with a bright window behind it. It's almost impossible to spread that histogram out and make it work in a manner that makes an attractive photo. Also, it's very good if you shoot your photos horizontally, landscape position, because that's the shape of the 16 by 9 720p high-def feed there at TWIT, and we tried to edit the photos so that they fit the entire screen there on the Ham Nation broadcast. As far as videos go, the thing you need to watch, I think, is to watch the time. We have about 10 minutes approximately, and I'd like to get three videos in every week. And to make that possible, we need 3 minutes max. Actually, 2.5 minutes is better. So try to get the camera on a tripod, put good audio on it. We do need a narrative description because of our audio listeners, Amanda. I think that about wraps it up. Did you have any other questions?
I think you answered my final one, which was about the audio and if people should be narrating their own shacks or if they're going to write it out and you're going to narrate over it. I think we got that. Hey, thank you so much, Dale.
Okay, yeah, the audio is almost the most important thing in the video, Amanda.
Okay, very good. And you did answer that question. So I think our viewers have it, and we appreciate that. All right, let's go to some other chat questions here. The first one, George, are you ready for a mystery whodunit? How can we figure this out kind of question at all, maybe?
Well, yeah, let's go for it.
Okay, I found this question interesting because there's so many unknowns, and you can, you know what, the answer, if it's I just don't know, hey, we accept that. But if you could figure this out for this guy, I think he would be very appreciative. KE0 CPH, he has been given a 2-meter antenna. Now he is sure that it's a 2-meter antenna, but he does not know what kind of antenna it is. Now he has SWR on it. He has a 2-to-1 ratio on the lower frequencies of 2 meters and a 3-to-1 on the upper frequencies. Now, he did not list what radio he's using. And also, he kind of thinks that maybe his problem might be that he has too long of LMR cable. Now, have you ever heard of this situation? Do you know, have you heard of this problem before? Anything you got?
You know, the first thing I would do is probably a sweep of the whole band. He's, I think you said 2-to-1 on the bottom end and 3-to-1 on the top end. Correct. What is it in the middle? It's possible it could be 1-to-1 in the middle, and it's just getting out that far on either end if the bandwidth of the antenna is not that good. Let's see. It's also possible that the whip, the whip could be either a little too short or a little too long, if it's adjustable. I'm not sure what kind of antenna he's talking about. I wouldn't think it was the cable necessarily, but all this is going to depend on what type of antenna it is. You know, some will be more susceptible to feline radiation and such, like a J-pole would be. So really kind of hard to answer that without knowing exactly what he's got there. But I would say definitely take some more spot measurements along the band there and see if maybe it's just resonant somewhere in the middle, you know?
I do know. Okay, well, thank you so much, Yancy.
Oh, Amanda.
Yes.
By the way, I looked up to see what ASMR was.
And?
And I saw what it was. I didn't get all excited, though.
And?
And that's about it. I've only got that's one microphone. It? Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Wow. All right. With that, thank you, George. Let's go to Don. Don, how you doing?
I don't know. I feel left out. I don't know what ASMR is. I'm going to have to Google that, I guess.
Yes, you will.
All right. Can I be honest that I don't know what he's talking about either? And I thought
one does. It's George.
Maybe. Was it you? I thought it was, maybe it was Val who said that.
I think
somebody, didn't say it.
Somebody last week said I needed to go look it up and start doing it. So if it wasn't you, then it must have been Val.
I've got two ways I can go. I can look it up on Google or I can look it up on Urban Dictionary. And I'm sure that those two are going to be, exactly. See, it's going
right?
to be completely
totally
different. So why don't we move on, so to speak? And Amanda, what was your question?
I don't even know anymore. I'm just ASMR. Like looking around. Aspen, do you know what ASMR is? She has no clue. I think it's a vowel thing.
I don't know. I really don't know.
But it was such a, he came back so great. I was like,
yes, I know. It was sucked right in.
Got it. I know. So, okay. Wow. Woo. Anyhow, let me find you a question, Don. Let's move on.
Go easy. Okay. Let's start with what my name is. I think I could probably answer that one. Oh, or call sign. I know that. It's right here.
Okay. Good. Good. Very good. Okay. All right. D-Star on HF. Now, I have heard of this, but I am not completely familiar with it. And I think that you would be more familiar with it. And I'm trying to look for my question here as I'm trying to talk to you. And yes, how does D-Star work over HF? Is it considered a data contact? And what part of the band would you use, etc.? I'm thinking about the D-Star ICOM radio. Now, I don't know what radio he's considering, but I have heard about this. Tell me more.
Yeah, that would either be the 7100 or the 9100, and that would be a great Ray Novak, N9JA question. He's in the chat room. He's probably probably typing feverishly as we speak. I do not have a D-Star-capable HF. I have the 7600, which does not have the D-Star chip in it. So I've never worked D-Star HF. I've never heard live D-Star HF decoded. I know that I have heard, I believe, I want to say... Trying to see which reflector I have heard this net on. I believe it's 30 Charlie. I think it's 30 Charlie is the reflector that I've heard the VHF or UHF portion, the reflector portion of the D-Star HF net. If you go to if you Google D-Star HF net, I'm sure you'll find everything you need to know about D-Star on HF. Now, I don't think that it's I think you can use it in any part of the band because it is essentially audio. I mean, it's digital audio, but it's essentially audio. It's not actual. Well, I'm not sure, but I do believe that D-Star can be used in any part of the HF band. There are probably like gentlemen's agreements windows. And again, I'm kind of making this up as I go along. I'm telling you what I think I know. A quick Google search or send an email to Ray Novak. You can find him N9JA and Ray will tell you everything you need to know about D-Star HF, a lot more than I can tell you.
Okay. Well, that's a start. And I think you're right about the reflector. I have heard about the reflector 30 Charlie, and I think that this takes place also on 20 meters. And I wish we would have had more time or this question last week when Ray was on. I totally would have asked him this and gotten this clarified without sounding like a mumbly, bumbly person here. But anyhow, you guys stay tuned. We might have the answer for you complete. With that, George, I'm going to mess you up with another what if question. So I love these, actually. It's kind of fun. And I'm seeing in the chat, by the way, ASMR Val's. She's chatting now and she's like, George, check it out on YouTube. Yep. So it was Val. Okay. Okay. Anyhow, how can I determine resonant frequencies of an unknown sloper that was gifted to him without an antenna analyzer?
You can do that by, if you've got an SWR meter using it, or if your rig has SWR on it, you can, on a meter, you can look there. Just start at the low end of the band, turn down low transmitter power, maybe put it on CW or AM, transmit and watch your SWR as you increase the frequency and you'll see it rise or dip. And whenever you find the dip, that's where it's resonant.
Oh, it's all about the dip.
It's about the
what'd
dip.
What'd you call me?
Yes. Yeah.
What'd you call me?
I think you heard us correctly.
Okay.
I think so. Okay.
Checking.
All right. Let me see if I can find any. Oh, yes. Who wants to take this? What is the math for figuring out a 2-meter dipole? Anybody?
Yeah, that's a good question for Gordo.
Yes. He's not here.
He is not here. Okay, well, we'll put that on standby, you guys. I promise we'll get that question asked. And
it's very simple. I just don't remember the number.
Yeah.
They put up those dipoles a lot for repeaters, in case you guys are wondering, like, why would you have a dipole for 2 meters or whatnot? They do those for repeaters a lot. Mm-hmm. So, and they're very, what's the word I'm looking for? Anyhow, they like them a lot. They're highly praised for that kind of service. You guys, other than that, I don't have any other questions. I would announce the special events, but you guys already went over them. And other than that, hey, I'm just here. I'm just ready to get on the radio and talk. Okay?
Awesome idea.
All right.
That works for me. I think I am too. And, you know, well, we didn't keep our promise to Brian, but we came close. Anyway, by the time he cuts out the dead audio parts in there, maybe we will be on time. But thanks for being here with us tonight. Bob should be back next week, I think. Gordo, he's already dropped out, but appreciate him being back with us tonight. Don, any final words from down south there?
No, just thanks for the kind support and the good words for Newsline. We hope to have more from Dr. Tamitha back here, and really looking forward to the edited down 5-minute Cliff Notes version of her solar forum at Dayton in the antenna forum. If you have not seen that whole thing, it's well worth a watch, and you can find that on YouTube. I believe you can find that on the I know you can find it on YouTube. So just search for that. And the ICOM website, maybe? Is that on? I'm not sure if that's on the ICOM America website. But anyway, it's available, and it's well worth the watch. It's well worth hunting it down. And so that's about it. And so 7-3 and good night from South Mississippi.
All right, 7-3, Don. Dale, also good to have you back on with us tonight. I believe we'll probably see you again in a couple of weeks and get some more of those great viewer videos there. Any final words from Wichita?
Oh, not a whole lot. Speaking of Wichita, don't forget the WZOW special event there on August 1st, and then the Coast Guard special event for Coast Guard Day taking place on Sunday, August 2nd from 10 in the morning Eastern time until midnight. Then later on in August, get a plug in right now for the Kansas CUSO party. That's going to be like the fourth weekend in August, and that's always a lot of fun as you learn how to spell sunflower in Kansas and a few other choice words, I guess. So that's it. Hope everyone has a good week, George.
All right. Thanks, Dale. And Amanda, sorry to put you on the spot there about the ASMR. I thought you were the one who had asked me about it, and you played along so well. I
really had to, because you were so intense. I thought, oh gosh, I have really messed up here by not knowing what he is talking about. So I'm just going to go with it until I'm really strung out. Oh boy. Anyhow, no, that's great. That was and thank you, Val, for doing that. I appreciate
yes.
that. No.
Yes.
And I don't even know where I was going with that, but you know what? It's been a great show tonight. And of course, I think we're going to have Bob on next week. So I'm really looking forward to having Bob join us again.
Yes, we can blame that one all on Val since she's not here this week.
Yep.
There it is. Autonomous sensory meridian response. Pretty weird. I went and looked at some of the videos there. It didn't do anything for me. It was fun to listen to, but, you know. Anyway,
I've been to Meridian, Mississippi, and I didn't get any response whatsoever. What's up with that?
Well, it's only about 75 miles away, and if you whisper, they just won't hear you over there. So.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, 7-3, everyone. Thanks for being here. We'll see you again next week.